The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Iran is attempting to impose financial pain in the war this morning, threatening to target banking infrastructure in the Gulf states and taking new aim at the Strait of Hormuz.
Several cargo vessels have been hit by projectiles in the Strait of Hormuz.
British military had reported earlier about one of their container ships being struck by some sort of a projectile, a UK-flagged ship, so they evacuated the crew. And then we had additional reports of two other ships carrying the flags of Thailand and Japan, respectively, also being hit.
New attacks are now sending oil prices on another wild ride today. A reminder, some 20 million barrels of fuel a day move through this critical shipping route, and it is clearly effectively remains shut down because of this very real threat.
As of now, they believe that about 13 vessels have been impacted since this war started.
The vessels being hit in the strait coincide with a threat from Iran's Revolutionary Guard that it's launching the heaviest and most intense bombardment of the war.
President Donald Trump has said that he wants the ships to continue going through the Strait of Hormuz, even if they're at great risk. He said they need to show some guts.
They are refusing to send now ships up through into the Red Sea because of the possibilities of the Houthis and the risks around Yemen. As a result, something like Maersk is saying the current situation is absolutely uncharted and unprecedented.
If this was to endure, this would create, I think, serious congestions and serious issues across the global supply chain.
I think the timing is not incidental. Remember last night, President Trump threatened them. He said, you know, if you try and close the Strait of Hormuz, then we'll deliver fire and brimstone against you. He made sort of blood-curdling threats to them. And so they responded by attacking three ships. That's their message. That when they're not going to be intimidated by this, this is what they're trying to say.
Those sea gates are front and center, and Iran is not backing down. At this point, that is the biggest piece of leverage that they have, is to disrupt oil supplies, disrupt those shipping lanes in the Strait of Hormuz, the Persian Gulf, the Bab el-Mandeb, and the Red Sea, and they're using it. They're using it, and they're pushing at the West. But we've got to look at this bigger threat, and President Trump is, he's pretty intimidated by the media coverage of rising oil prices, to the point where it seems like that will lead to him, again, making this catastrophic mistake of just engaging in limited warfare with Iran, letting them survive, letting them get away with it. Melanie Phillips writes in her latest column, it's titled Holding Our Nerve. She says, those clamoring for the Iran war to end prematurely haven't a clue about the stakes involved. So is Trump winding, this is jumping into the middle of the article, so is Trump winding the war down or ramping it up? Maybe he was suggesting a speedy end to the war merely to get the oil price down again and fast. Who knows? But if he ends the war prematurely, the regime survives. And if that happens because of the oil price, then America, Britain, and the world will be held hostage by Iran repeatedly deploying that oil weapon to make itself invulnerable as it develops its nuclear weapons and creates a ballistic missile system so enormous that no one will be able to prevent it from pursuing its infernal goal to destroy the West. And she's saying, you've got to keep going. You've got to completely dismantle this regime, and anything less, if it's that limited warfare, then this radical regime survives, and in the long run, will be failure again. Again, it's humiliating. Of course, oil, energy, those supply lines are important. It's a big part of geopolitics. But when you look at how evil this regime is, what they're going after to pursue nuclear weapons, I mean, the price of oil should really be sort of negligible at the moment. Now, if you could get in there and commit to doing this quickly, commit to, again, you have to go in and you've got to put troops on the ground and actually go after the head of the snake like we should have done in 2001. But America gets so easily distracted by all of these other things. And again, when it comes down to it, it's really going to be Europe that takes the brunt of this if Iran keeps this up. And America doesn't have the will to stay in this area of the world. Trump has made it clear that he has this hemispheric approach to geopolitics. He wants America to look after North and South America, which you can't really keep Europe out of South America. And he wants Europe to take care of their area of the world. And he's clearing the way for that Holy Roman Empire to go in to the Middle East. It is humiliating. America's broken will, no zeal to stamp out evil. Of course, like we've said on the show, you have to credit Trump for going and starting it, because America wouldn't do it the past 50 years. But you see this broken will because of how divided the United States is. It's a curse. Leviticus 26, verse 19, I will break the pride of your power. And that's why Mr. Armstrong said America has won its last war. This is a curse, this limited warfare. We can't have this approach to fighting or we're never going to win. We need to see the enemy clearly. And America doesn't understand, like Melanie Phillips points out there, America doesn't see Iran clearly. America doesn't understand the enemy that it is up against. I wanted to give you a few quotes from the Overcomer booklet. We're approaching the spring holy day season, and many of God's people are reading this book about fighting sin, about overcoming sin. It's probably the only area where I would say, you know, America first should be America looks at itself in the mirror and repents and focuses on, we've got all of these sins and all of these problems that we need to fix and take care of, and then we'll go out and start trying to help fix the problems in the world. Of course, that's not going to happen, and there's the immediate threat of Iran having a nuclear weapon. But sin makes you weak. And we need America first. It should be America repents first, and America looks at its own problems at home and tries to solve them. I forgot to say hello, by the way. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. If you have comments for the show, send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Thought I'd mention as well, today is March 11th. That's a significant date in Bible prophecy and in our church literature. You can read Daniel Unsealed at Last, where it talks about what happened on this date. Mr. Armstrong died January 16, 1986. There's the 1,150-day prophecy that gets you to March 11, 1989, and when that sanctuary began to be cleansed. I don't have time to go through all of those details, but if you're interested in that, there's a section in Daniel Unsealed at Last that you can go and read online as well. The Overcomer booklet, just to make this point about sin, says, how clear is your mental picture of your enemy and of your problems? Do you have a severe recurring problem? You could say Iran has been that way. It's this problem that keeps coming up. Certainly a problem you have had all your life takes time to overcome, but if you don't see it clearly, you can't battle it. And that's what I want to focus on in the beginning of this program, is seeing the enemy clearly, seeing what Iran is. In that Overcomer booklet, there's a section, The Science of Spiritual Warfare. One of the first points there, point number one, morale and warfare is vitally important. Number two, you must have maximum concentration. You've got to focus everything on eradicating that enemy. But America is distracted. America is, again, overcome with sin. Number three, learn the value of time. Number four, embrace unity of command. I mean, we can't even overcome these physical enemies, these physical problems. America is overcome with division, and that sin makes you weak. It's embarrassing when President Trump, he's trying to please the radical left-wing media and he wants positive coverage. I mean, he's just willing to do whatever he has to win an election. That's a terrible way to, I mean, it's every president is under that same pressure. There was an article where they were talking about the GOP strategist telling other Republicans, stop talking about mass deportations because it's leading to us not polling well. Stop talking about ICE. We've got to take ICE out of Minneapolis. It doesn't look good. So we don't do the right thing because we want to please the pollsters. Again, there's so much corruption in the United States. We've got the Epstein scandal. I was reading a little bit about the Obama Center Foundation and that big, ugly building they're making in Chicago. And all of Obama's friends are leading the board of this charity, essentially, that's constructing this building. And it's donations, and it's I think it must be like up to $1 billion worth of cash flow in order to construct this monstrosity. But all of his friends lead on this board, and they're making millions of dollars from it. Of course, there's the Spygate scandal. There's the Medicaid fraud. CBS News, we visited Ground Zero for hospice fraud, Los Angeles, California. And they talk about how all of these hospice centers popped up in 2010 when Obama was in control, when Obama was in power. All of these hospice centers start up because the state can give them license to operate, but it's Medicare that funds them. It says 3 years ago, California state auditors sounded the alarm that LA County had seen a 1,500% increase in hospice companies since 2010. More than six times the national average relative to its elderly population. So California grants all of these licenses knowing that they'll get money directly from the federal government. And then CBS goes out and says, finds these people and says, hey, you're on the list of receiving hospice care from this institution. Did you know that? And the older individual says, no, I had no idea I needed hospice care. They're walking around just fine. But it's easy to commit this fraud because the hospice, they go out to individual homes and you've got to literally go there to investigate this. But it's just rampant fraud, and it's Obama's way of doling out reparations. All of this fraud, not auditing it, not looking at those daycare centers in Minneapolis, taking taxpayer money and reallocating it to the fraudsters. Again, there's just so much sin at home. Is it any wonder that we can't clearly see the enemy or that we don't have the will to fight? Melanie Phillips says, but the idea that a negotiated compromise with the regime is even possible, this is because Trump wants to get them to make a deal. And we've read her point before. The notion or the idea that you would approach this thinking you can deal with them is the problem. If you think that way, you're off. But the idea that a negotiated compromise with the regime is even possible, let alone desirable, is yet another example of Western myopia and wishful thinking, a luxury not available to those at the sharp end of Tehran's psychopathic aggression. Mr. Fleury played a trailer from the documentary Iranium. I think that came out in 2011 or 2012. And I want to play a few clips for you because it helps spell out the ideology of Iran and what we are up against. Here is clip six.
America would soon become Khomeini's next adversary.
In their perception, the leading power of the world of the unbelievers is the United States. And the United States is therefore inevitably the main enemy.
America is the great Satan because, from their point of view, it is the enemy of God. We are Satan whispering into the ears of the Muslims, trying to tempt them away from Islam.
For years, during our school in Iran, our teachers and the government, they told us the Americans are devils, they want to kill us. Every morning, they forced us to just chant death to America.
ما از دخالت نظامی نمی ترسیم. اون چیزی که ما را می ترساند وابستگی فرهنگی است.
You had to read a few of the subtitles there, but this is a religious war for them, and they're raised on that for at least the past 50 years. But throughout all of the history of Islam, this is a holy war for them. And in the West, we don't understand that. We have the Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff approach of, if they just have money and a little bit of stability, they won't want to blow us up. If we're just nice to them long enough, they'll leave us alone. Melanie writes, the deeper reason why so many fail to appreciate the true nature and scope of the threat posed by Iran is that the West always views the rest of the world through its own cultural prism. Because the West is so secular, it assumes everyone is governed by rational self-interest. It simply doesn't understand the power exerted by religious fanaticism over people's minds. And Iran is a big country, 90 million. There's well over a billion Muslims around the world. But even just looking and focusing on Iran, it's easy to think, well, there's protesters that want regime change. Well, there's a lot of people that don't. Millions of people that don't. That revolution occurred 50 years ago for a reason. The IRGC, I'll play a couple clips, they're well entrenched within every facet of society. So to blow up the Ayatollah and not go and finish the job, well, it can just lead to more chaos, as we've pointed out. I won't play the clip of Witkoff and Kushner when they're talking about making their deal with the leaders of Hamas and basically, well, the Hamas leader, his son was blown up and I also lost a son and we can relate on that. And everybody just wants to be happy. We just want peace. And you know what brings that? More money. Let's make a deal. We'll have all these businesses come over and we'll make the Gaza Strip. It'll be a paradise. Here's another clip from Iranium about what the West does not understand about the enemy that it can't clearly see. Clip 11.
There is a sort of cultural relativism in the West which makes people reluctant to condemn, particularly to condemn another civilization. We must be nice to them. We must be tolerant, we must be understanding, and so forth. But this should not go to the level of blinding ourselves to the more painful realities of the situation.
Americans and Europeans are really uncomfortable with the idea of holy wars and mass murder for religious reasons. They can't imagine themselves slaughtering other human beings because the true religion needs to defeat the enemies of God. Because they can't imagine that for themselves, they also can't imagine that others behave that way. But this is a failure of imagination.
این نهضت باید زنده بماند و زنده ماندنش به این خون ریزه هاست. بریزید خون ها را.
If you have those profound, strongly held religious beliefs, you send people to the deaths, you're doing them a favor. You're giving them a quick free pass to heaven and all its delights. And we saw that during the Iraq-Iran war, when they were willing to send hundreds of children to walk into the minefields to clear them for them.
It's Hamas. We don't see what we're up against. You can't make a deal with them. We've been trying to make a deal with them for decades, and it's a wound, like Hosea says. That peace process is a wound. Trying to negotiate with them it's a wound. It's a crippling Israel. Melanie Phillips says, when Islamic human bombs blow themselves up, the West tells itself that they have been driven to do so by oppression and despair. It can't get its collective head around the fact that such atrocities are fueled by an ecstatic belief that mass murder of the infidels is the will of God. That's how they see it. And this is the left. They apologize for everything. Well, crime is because you're poor. They're acting this way because, well, they don't have the great business deals that America has, and if they could just have a little more money, they wouldn't want to do this. Phillips says there's even less understanding of the Tehran regime's particular kind of fanaticism. Its dominant members are Shia Twelvers, who believe that an apocalypse will bring to earth the Shia Messiah, the 12th Imam. Anyone who thinks there can ever be any compromise with such fanatics is on a different planet. World War III is an incentive for them. This next clip from Iranium explains that in the Cold War, the Russians aren't even that bad. There was at least mutually assured destruction that would prevent that from happening. We didn't want nuclear war to start because no nation wanted to commit suicide. But we don't see clearly what we're dealing with. This is clip 12.
In Islam, as in Christianity, as in Judaism, there is what you might call an end of time scenario in which the Mahdi, the descendant of the Prophet, returns and leads the forces of the true believers in the final struggle against the forces of the unbelievers. Now, what is really alarming is that from the pronouncements, particularly of Ahmadinejad and others of his group, they believe that that time is now, that this is the end of time, that this is the final struggle.
Anybody who tells you that we shouldn't take this seriously is not looking at the individuals who are in power, who are ruling Iran today. They believe that by creating apocalyptic conditions, that they will bring the Mahdi back. Every speech that Ahmadinejad gives, whether it's at the United Nations in New York, or in Tehran, or in Mashhad, or someplace else, begins with this. He says, "Let my words and my actions hasten the return of the 12th Imam."
O God, hasten the arrival of Imam al-Mahdi and grant him good health and victory, and make us his followers and those who attest to his rightfulness.
Khamenei, Ahmadinejad, and some of the others truly believe that they've been put on earth in order to lead the Muslim world in a glorious jihad against the infidels and establish the rule of the 12th Imam on earth.
They really, in this cult, believe that they ought to try to get him back so they can have the battles that will end the world and send all them in their view to heaven and the rest of us to hell.
What makes that particularly alarming is the whole question of nuclear weapons. During the Cold War, both the United States and the Soviet Union had nuclear weapons, but they didn't use them, and they knew that they wouldn't use them because of what we used to call at that time MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction. Each side knew that if they used nuclear weapons, the others would respond in kind, and this would obliterate everybody. With these people, with their apocalyptic mindset, mutual assured destruction is not a deterrent, it's an inducement.
Deterrence is not likely to work, since it's their purpose to bring about this calamity rather than to avoid it.
That incentivizes them. That's why it's a big problem if they get a nuclear weapon. And of course, we pray that Christ would return. But these people see themselves as playing an active role in bringing about this chaos and destruction. We need Christ to return to solve these sorts of problems. We have to pray, "Thy kingdom come." You see what a gross counterfeit that is that they have over there. But they see their role as, well, we've got to destroy everybody. We've got to trigger this ourselves. And the United States, they just want, you know, if we can get them a little more cash, they'll start to like. I mean, that was totally Obama's approach. Stop isolating them. Stop being mean to them. They'll start to like us. Now, Obama knew what he was dealing with. And he liked that because he hated America. President Trump, in many ways, is a lot more ignorant than Obama or that Antiochus type. Iran, they have planned, they've been planning this for decades. I was going to play another clip from that movie. It talks about how they lead global terrorism, these sleeper cells around the world that they have activated over many decades. And we saw it once President Trump started those strikes on Iran. There were these terrorists that came out. I don't know that they're directly, you know, switched on by Iran, but this is radical Islam. This is what they do. They attack. And since these strikes have started, people have been coming in. There were shots fired at the U.S. consulate in Canada. There was the shooting in Austin from the man wearing it said Allah on his sweater, and then his undershirt had the Iranian flag under it. Here's a montage of some of the latest attacks. Clip two.
The war in the Middle East threatening to spill well beyond the region as Iran is reportedly trying to activate sleeper cells abroad.
Tonight, just hours after the U.S. attack on Iran and the killing of its supreme leader, the horrific and deadly scene outside of a bar in Austin, Texas. A gunman opening fire on more than a dozen people.
Oh, my God.
Law enforcement sources say this image obtained by Fox News is the suspect, dressed in a hooded sweatshirt bearing the words, property of Allah.
There were indicators that on the subject and in his vehicle that indicate potential nexus to terrorism.
While we don't yet know if Iran was the primary motive for the attack in Austin, authorities are investigating whether it may have played some role.
Breaking news, Canadian police reporting that the U.S. consulate in Toronto has been hit by gunfire.
Again, I will repeat, the suspect vehicle was a white Honda CRV. There were two males, two individuals that emerged and discharged the firearms.
Police saying there were people inside the consulate when the shots were fired, but that no one was injured.
They are investigating two shootings similar in the details at two synagogues that in the last 2 weeks. You know, the question is this related to what's going on in Iran?
You know, folks, this is Ontario, Canada. We've never seen this in our entire lives. I believe there's sleeper cells all over the world, as we know. They're in the U.S., they're in Canada here.
We've seen reports this week that America has intercepted encrypted messages ordering the activation of Iranian sleeper cells globally.
An alert has gone out to law enforcement warning about the possibility of sleeper cell attacks in the U.S. President Trump addressed the risk of a sleeper cell attack.
Activated any sleeper cells inside the U.S.
They've been trying for a long time. We've been very much on top of it. We're watching every single one of them. Yeah, we know a lot about them.
Those people who are recruited can be street gangs like we've seen in Sweden. They've even recruited teenagers to throw grenades at the Israeli embassy. And they can a drug dealer in Azerbaijan that was supposed to assassinate a rabbi, and almost 20 incidents in the UK. And of course, we have seen the incident, the latest one in Australia. The Western society are not able to confront this such a new war.
How many of these operatives does Mossad estimate are in key countries in the West? I mean, are we talking about thousands of cells here?
Unfortunately, you are correct, Sherry. This is exactly the number that we are talking about. We are talking about hundreds and even thousands of those cells, because it's very easy to recruit them. It's you don't need ideologic. You don't need nothing. You just have to pay the money.
We're in a war with Iran. Joe Biden let thousands, millions of people into this country. We don't know who they are. Now more than ever, we need to fund the Department of Homeland Security.
In the name of diversity, diversity is our strength. Diversity, it turns out, according to the left-wing definition of it, is a huge vulnerability. Letting in, well, nobody, or not vetting them, not knowing who they are, no way to keep track of them. And it's not just loyalty to another country. That's one thing that the hyphenated Americans like Teddy Roosevelt talked about. Their loyalty is to this religious cult that wants to bring about World War III. And when they see that the regime in Iran is being threatened, they attack. Got tons of stories here about just throughout the past decades, these sorts of sleeper cell attacks. I mean, they tried to assassinate President Trump. They've organized shootings, not just in the United States, but America and Britain have let in all of these strangers, like Bible prophecy says, and those strangers are getting themselves up. They're high. They're overcoming the nations of Israel. Again, this doesn't have to be a sophisticated attack. Terror, it's just this fear. There's this presence. You don't know. It could be like the one in New York City where there was this anti-Mamdani protest, and then this guy just comes out of nowhere and starts lobbing homemade pipe bombs into the crowd. Melanie Phillips says the regime in Iran thinks it can still win. They're not backing down. And as with Hamas and Gaza, the regime believes it only has to survive in order to win. Just survive. Continue to exist. Setbacks and defeats, however grave, can be reversed in the fullness of time. For the Islamists take the longest view in the world. They've been waging holy war ever since the 7th century. They have patience. They can wait. Can President Trump wait? How long can he endure the oil prices being a little bit higher? And then this isn't just as simple as taking out the Ayatollah. The IRGC is the mechanism of Iran. It's pretty much how the country operates and is run. Notice this clip. Again, this is 10, 15 years ago this film was made. And it talks about the IRGC and how entrenched they are in Iran. And it's probably twice as worse today. This is clip 10.
Khamenei's hold on power is made possible by a powerful and loyal military force.
Who are the people holding power in Iran? Well, the clerics, the Guardian Council, but the men who actually rule on a day-to-day basis are the men with the guns, the Revolutionary Guard and the Basij. These are the ideologically committed shock troops of the Islamic Republic.
The mandate of the IRGC is spelled out quite specifically in the Iranian constitution that the IRGC is constituted as a religious army. Not only does the constitution say its mission is jihad, it quotes the Quran in verse 860, which says, strike terror into the hearts of the enemy.
One member of the Revolutionary Guards was Reza Khalili, who secretly passed information to the CIA. He now disguises his identity living in the United States.
The Revolutionary Guards were formed initially to secure the country against any coups or potential takeovers. But the Guards expanded from there immediately.
Today, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, or IRGC, has 125,000 fighters, with tens of thousands of additional members in its paramilitary wings.
They took hold of the financial parts of the country. They expanded into terrorism. They expanded into the foreign ministry, where they were sent as diplomats to Iranian consulates and embassies.
General Petraeus said Iran's ambassador in Baghdad, also a part of Iran's al-Quds force.
The Quds force controls the policy for Iraq.
They have their own intelligence service, their own university, their own businesses. They control an enormous amount of Iranian industry, including the oil business.
The IRGC is so deeply entrenched in Iran's economy and commercial enterprises, it is increasingly likely that if you are doing business with Iran, you are doing business with the IRGC.
It's not like going into Venezuela. It's not just taking out the top leader. It's radical Islam headed up by Iran. And there's a lot of them that will just fill in the place of the Ayatollah, like Mr. Fleury covered earlier this week. It's a spiritual office. They'll just keep finding another one. And you've got to go into Iran the way we went into Iraq and Afghanistan and actually colonize. It's a dirty word to say that. You've got to take over and conquer, or that threat is going to be there. And America, there's no way America is going to do that. We couldn't even stomach that in little Afghanistan. Melanie Phillips says, they know America doesn't have the will to fight a long war. I mean, even Afghanistan, they call it a forever war, and 20 years is a long war. Shouldn't take that long. But in terms of radical Islam, the way that they view the world, that's not a long time to wait. You know, it's a quarter of somebody's lifetime over there. Just hold out, the Americans will give up, and we'll be back. Melanie says, and if their backs really are to the wall, this is talking about the regime in Iran, they'll make sure they take down with them as many Jews and Christians as they can. There's one further aspect of this whose significance is not widely recognized by Western naval gazers. The Iranian regime has served as command central for Islamism in the West. even though its members are Shia Muslims, while the Islamists of Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the Muslim Brotherhood are Sunni Muslims and notionally deadly rivals. The takeover by Islam in 1979 of a previously West-facing state inspired and galvanized Islamists across the world to bring about the same thing in Britain, Europe, and America. See, we conquered a country, and there's divisions within Islam, but their main enemy is the West. They see, they have a clear definition of their enemy, and they see, well, this is a great thing that happened in Iran. We're going to go do this in Britain. We're going to do this in France, and it's a holy war. Europe's waking up to it. And again, that's going to be even worse. This is what Bible prophecy talks about, these clashes of civilization. The goal here for Iran, I mean, they want to blot out cultures. They want to erase culture. You look at England, I mean, they are paralyzed with fear. Starmer comes out a couple days after and says, oh yeah, we'll actually help you, Trump. And Trump says, no, don't bother with it. You weren't there from the beginning. Because they don't want an uprising in their nation because they know how violent the Islamists there are. So they've got to walk that line very carefully. And then you look at, I just saw the headline this morning that they want to remove Winston Churchill from the £5 note. I took a bunch of those when I lived over in England and just kept them because I thought they were cool bookmarks or posters to have a Churchill on that bill or that note. But like Daryl Cooper and Tucker Carlson, you can't go there. Churchill started World War II. The Muslims don't like him. So we're just gonna put some nature scenes on the bill. They had a referendum or a vote about, well, what should we replace all of the great heroes of our history with? Because it's not just Churchill, they're taking off Turner, who's a great artist of the empire. They said, well, we don't want to put architecture up there. That's too much of the British Empire. We don't want to remember that colonialist past. We don't want to put art up there. We've got so much beautiful art. We don't want to put that up there. We're just going to put nature scenes up there. And then they'll find a way to complain about that because the animal was named after some racist British explorer. But blot out the culture. And the West, silly dove Ephraim, lets them do it. Great British news. Winston Churchill to be scrapped from banknotes as Bank of England panel labels decision overdue. We've wanted to do this for such a long time. While the monarch will remain on the front of the notes, the decision will remove historical figures, including Churchill, Jane Austen, J.M. Turner, and Alan Turing. You're not allowed to celebrate the heroes of the nation. No art, no architecture, just some nature scenes. Look, the United States has been doing this for a while. They look at the back of all the new U.S. quarters since like the year 2019 or 2020. It's as woke as it gets. I don't even know 90% of the people that they put on there. Every woke cause is now on the back of a quarter. Again, our nations are just so weak. Sin makes us weak. The battle plan should be repentance. That's where you start. But our nations, we don't see sin clearly. We can't conquer. Philip says, so the destruction of the Islamic regime in Tehran might deal a severe blow to the march of Islamism in the West. The stakes in this war are therefore enormous, but the end game isn't clear. The Iranian threat can never be totally neutralized unless the regime itself is brought down. At present, that prospect is but a blur on the horizon. This war could be seen as utterly reckless unless the alternative is fully understood. Then it becomes utterly imperative and essential that it's pursued until the Iranian Islamic regime is no more. And the United States doesn't have the will to do that, but is clearing the way for Europe to do it. Those prophecies in Daniel 11 talks about a whirlwind and troops are going to enter in, chariots are going to enter in and take over. Melanie Phillips has strong words there. Again, the political environment in the United States, just Trump can't possibly do it. look at how they're pushing back against Trump shooting at those three cargo ships in the Strait of Hormuz. Trump has pledged to secure the strait, and that's pretty expensive to have U.S. Navy ships escorting all of these cargo ships. That's a high cost, and for Iran, they really don't have to do a lot. They've got thousands of these little boats that can run out there and throw mines in the water, drones that can hit these ships. Again, Iran is not Venezuela just as a matter of geography, among many other reasons, but they have control or great influence on these sea gates that Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Fleury, that Bible prophecy said would be a big part of the fulfillment of these prophecies. Eurointelligence says, in other words, if the U.S. reopens the strait, their job will be to protect every single ship, whereas the Iranians only need a single successful hit. The Israeli journalist, writes in Haaretz, that the strategic objective of the Revolutionary Guards is to sustain a prolonged war of attrition. Later, this article says, if Trump were to chicken out after 4 weeks without getting the job done, he would leave Israel exposed. How much of an appetite does America have for this war and then have to look over to Germany and Europe? This story, this attack on Iran, has been a catalyst for so many other prophecies. We look at these trend lines. You can go to the Trumpet website, and at the top there's a tab that says trends. All of those articles are great explainers about these trends in Bible prophecy. And a trend line, I mean, if you plot it on a graph, there's this news event here and you can see the trend moving in this direction. And maybe there's one where it may be a little lower on the chart and it looks like it's moving in another direction. But then it comes back and it's higher and that trend line is moving in that direction. And critics will say, well, what about the King of the South now? Well, what about it? By what parameter? You've got to look at God's timetable, not impose your own parameters on these things, but then look at all of the other things that God has clearly allowed this to happen to help put all of these other things in place. The King of the South is still pushing. They're pushing in the Strait of Hormuz. They're pushing in Africa, as I'll get to in a few minutes. God is using this moment, and look at all of the other things that he's allowing to get into place. It reminded me of the section in the New Throne of David booklet where God talks about these four chariots that he sends forth into the four corners of the earth and how everything is very measured. And God is preparing for this unless there's repentance. You can read about that section in the New Throne of David booklet. But look at how many other prophecies are falling into place. There's the King of the North, Europe arming in response to this war, rushing to the defense of Cyprus. Kings of the East, they see what is happening here. And in a lot of ways, it's giving them a chance to sort of reflect on, oh, well, our weapon systems weren't what they needed to be in Iran and Venezuela. Let's ramp that up. Where are we going to get our oil from? You can see the Psalm 83 alliance taking shape more clearly because Iran attacked those moderate Arab nations. They're running to Europe and to Germany. The Holy Roman Empire, they want to be around Jerusalem. You see this Daniel 11 whirlwind prophecy coming in as well. The Holy Roman Empire, they're going to, again, send in ground troops. The United States, you can see, opening the door for that. But before the Holy Roman Empire invades, as Daniel 11 explains, they attack these other nations, Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. And as Mr. Fleury explains, well, why do they go after those countries? Well, they go after those countries because they're allied with Iran before this occurs. This is a clip from the Key of David in 2016 titled Secret Whirlwind Destroys Iran. This is clip 8.
It's just like a whirlwind that circles round and round and does a lot of destruction. This is a military whirlwind, and it just whirls all around you. Now, if you notice, it says here that this whirlwind is, I'll just read it to you again, and the King of the North shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, with horsemen, and with many ships. You're going to have a whirlwind. You're going to have like it's coming, destruction coming from the air, coming from the land warfare, and even from the sea. They're going to just, Germany and this German-led Europe is going to attack them from every direction, and they've circled Iran and their allies, and they're going to throw everything they have at them, and they're going to totally destroy them. And their allies will certainly be surrendering to Germany or willing to change courses very radically if they want to survive. But look, when you talk about an all-out war like that, that includes so much power, that doesn't happen by accident. That is being planned at this very moment and expanded, and yet most people don't even see it happening. Germany has some powerful interests throughout Africa. They're recolonizing African nation states within Africa. Now, they have ambitions that are even greater than the King of the South in many ways. They have a strategy, and none of this is coincidence.
Everyone's getting into position. Go to that Trends article at the Trumpet. Iran and Europe heading for a clash of civilizations. It talks about Iran trying not just to have control of the Strait of Hormuz, but the Red Sea as well. But Germany is also positioning itself. Request this booklet, Germany's Secret Strategy to Destroy Iran. I think this was written based off of those Key of David programs. And you see, even, I think it was just Monday night that Iran fired a couple of missiles at a base that is occupied by 500 German troops in Jordan. Deutsche Welle says, Iran war, is the German military caught in the crossfire? Of course, they're going to set everything up like Germany's just this innocent bystander and they just got caught up in the crossfire of it. But like that prophecy says, this has been a clash of civilizations for thousands of years, 1500 at least, since Islam was created. But there's this battle for Jerusalem, for the Holy Land. Is the German military caught in the crossfire? And they talk about, we're understaffed, we're stretched too thin. If we're going to stay in these places, we've got to boost the troop presence there. They talk about how reliant they are on the United States to look after them. Spiegel says, Iranian missile attack on German field camp in Jordan. The German field camp in Al-Azraq, Jordan, was attacked with ballistic missiles fired from Iran on Monday night. So Germany is in Jordan. According to information obtained by Spiegel, the German section of the Jordanian air base, which also houses the U.S. Air Force, was hit. A barracks building belonging to the German contingent was reportedly struck. Since the German soldiers were in shelters at the time, no one was injured. Anyway, you can see Germany getting more involved here as well. The last story I wanted to draw attention to was what's happening in Sudan. This is an area of the world, North Africa, that Sahel region below the Sahara Desert. And there are terrorist groups just swarming through this area. And if you look at that map that Mr. Fleury points at and the Daniel 11 Alliance and that Psalm 83 Alliance, Iran is allied with Ethiopia, Egypt, Libya. They're in Africa. And it's this Red Sea strategy that Mr. Fleury talked about. But in Sudan right now, there's been a civil war there for over 3 years at least. Seems like there's always a civil war. But radical Islam is taking over. Radical Islam is calling the shots. And just, I think it was just yesterday that the United States designated the Muslim Brotherhood in Sudan as a terror organization. Don't know why that always takes so long. But notice this montage and this clip talks about, well, who is helping fund that group in Sudan? This is clip 4.
Aid to Gaza, Sudan, and other world crises is grinding to a halt. The U.S.-Israeli war on Iran has resulted in airspace closures and the halt of shipping through the critical Strait of Hormuz, which is effectively closed.
It can get much worse with the backlog of cargo air freight, with a number of ports which are operating, but shipments are not being able to be unloaded, with a number of border issues which are closing right now.
We're particularly concerned about Africa.
Famine-struck Sudan is particularly exposed, says UNHCR spokesperson Charlotte Wolf.
Sudan is approaching very shortly the 3-year mark of this terrible crisis, the largest displacement crisis in Africa. And of course, crises that are already extremely neglected and lacking immediate funding. And so these could be further exacerbated.
People in dire need of assistance will have to wait longer for food.
The U.S. will soon label the Sudanese Muslim Brotherhood as a foreign terrorist organization.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the Sudanese Muslim Brotherhood was trained and supported by Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps.
The terror group has contributed more than 20,000 fighters to the conflict, many receiving training and support from Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
The Sudanese Muslim Brotherhood uses unrestrained violence against civilians to undermine efforts to resolve the conflict in Sudan and advance its violent Islamist ideology. Its fighters, many receiving training and other support from Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, have conducted mass executions of civilians.
The designation gives Washington powerful new tools. It allows the U.S. to freeze assets, block funding, and criminalize anyone providing material support to the group.
The video reveals the true face of the Brotherhood group and their allies in Sudan, clearly manifested in their incitement to violence and bloodshed. These individuals do not stop at spreading chaos. Rather, they adopt hostile foreign agendas, exploiting religious discourse to justify terrorism and violate all international covenants. They place Tehran's interests above the interests of their own homelands, turning Sudan into a battlefield for regional conflicts.
You can see where Iran is moving in to Africa there. They've got the Houthis in Yemen, and that allows them to threaten the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, like the opening montage explained. Ships are even scared to pass through there. Then they are working their way up along the Red Sea. And the United States, how much patience does the United States have to keep dealing with this before it becomes Europe's problem? And Europe is not naive to that. Germany is not naive to that. They don't want to rely on the United States anymore. You can see all of these prophecies just taking shape here. I don't know how much they said even in that montage about just the IRGC being there training this group in Sudan. But it's a massive terror organization. And this is what Iran does. This is what they've done for decades, is take or fund these proxy terror networks. And it's why Germany sets up this whirlwind strategy to go after them, and that's why they have to go after Libya and Egypt and Ethiopia. You see Iran moving in that direction, and that's part of Psalm 83, is they've lost Syria, they've lost Lebanon, just like Mr. Fleury said would happen, because those nations are allied, or are in that Psalm 83 alliance. It's amazing seeing all of this take shape. And these maps that are based on Bible prophecy, you know, we've been producing them for decades now. Mr. Armstrong was producing these. Request these booklets, get familiar with these prophecies. Of course, there's the King of the South booklet that explains Daniel 11 and Psalm 83. And then if you haven't, request Germany's secret strategy to destroy Iran. All of our literature is free. You can call the number on your screen. You can order online as well. You can read it right now for free online. All of this literature is available for you to download a PDF for. You can read it in your web browser. Don't forget to subscribe as well to the Trumpet Daily channel on Rumble or YouTube. You can send feedback or comments to td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you so much for joining us on today's show. And Mr. Fleury should be back with you again tomorrow. Thank you for joining us.